Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ray. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Today, we're going to be talking about Michael Brown and the Me Too investigation that was done against him. We're going to talk about this, even though it's a very old story that's been brought up to light recently. But Michael Brown's a pretty significant person in the realm of charismatic apologetics. He's the founder of multiple ministries, which I'll do his bio in a second. But he's been Me Too'd recently, and this is an interesting story of something being re-adjudicated in the public after it was already handled two decades ago. So we're going to talk about this. How much of a story is this, and what is going to be the lasting impact on this event? So that's what we're going to talk about today. But first, I want you to know Evangelical Dark Web is a Christian news gathering and commentary ministry. You can support our work over at evangelicaldarkweb.org/join. That's linked in the description below. I also have a book, Winning Not Winsome, 10 Commandments of Spiritual Warfare. It's linked in the description below. But the least you can do is like this video, subscribe to the channel, to the podcast, if you are new. So, Michael Brown Me Too investigation found evidence of wrongdoing. And we're going to dive into the details, just a little bit more about Michael Brown's background. Founder of Fire School of Ministry and The Line of Fire, Dr. Brown Ministries Incorporated. So this investigation sprang, it began on January 13th, found that Brown's actions towards two adult females were inappropriate and unacceptable for his leadership position. The investigation reviewed evidence, conducted interviews, and analyzed the situation, ultimately concluding that Brown's conduct violated the ethical standards expected of someone in his role. Now, one thing to note about the investigation, it's 47 pages long, so we're going to do the too long didn't read version of this story. For those of you who really don't want to read 47 pages of, I've gone through it. It's not a lot. It's a lot of things that were already addressed, and it's a lot of going into things that are not a big deal to be bringing up, multiple decades later. So I think that the most salacious details, there's no conclusion on. And that's what we're about to talk about, is what they don't find and what doesn't get a clear, definitive answer to it. So what exactly is this all about? So Michael Brown, Firefighter Report, refuses to refer to the since-deceased Kim, and these are all sort of pseudonymous names, and it doesn't dive into the phone sex allegation, because Michael Brown was accused of having phone sex with someone who is not his wife, and that's one of the more salacious details. In fact, that might be, this is actually a very critical detail and critical allegation, because this is the allegation that blows, if true, blows Michael Brown's defense out of the water, because Michael Brown has very much insisted that this was a paternal relationship between someone who's not his daughter, by the way, that went too far. That's Michael Brown's alibi. I mean, he doesn't think that he didn't sin in all this, but he's played it off as this was a father-daughter relationship that, stretched the boundaries of what was appropriate and what was inappropriate. That is Michael Brown's kind of insistence. So we have covered this story before, but it is worth noting that in 2020, Sarah Monk, who is the second main accuser, the living main accuser of Brown, informed this person named Chris Bennett of events from 2001, 2002, and she told him that there was more than just hand-holding in a father-daughter relationship that went too far. And this eventually found its way to the press, And now we have an investigation written by a Me Too cottage industry in the Firefly report. So this, again, this is the report. I wish it said more and fewer words, but yeah. Don't expect feminist lawyers to be concise with their language. So 2001 marked a time of transition for Dr. Brown, who had recently been ousted from the Brownsville Revival School of Ministry. In response, Brown founded the Fire School of Ministry, which would be a direct competitor. It was during this time that he befriended a student named Sarah Monk, initially referred synonymously as Erin, in her early 20s. So again, she's an adult. He cultivated what he perceived to be a father-daughter relationship with her. They talked often and were affectionate. There is some dispute over what entailed, but all sides agree that there was hand-holding. So this part's very much agreed on. And this is a summary from a little bit ago, but it's a better... This is what was written on Evangelical Dark Web when we first covered this story. So, while on a drive back from a ministry event in 2002, a ministry associate of Dr. Brown named Chris Bennett noticed that Michael and Sarah were holding hands during the drive. He was shocked at what he saw and decided to report it to his boss, Keith Collins. Collins and another man in Fire leadership confronted Brown about the hand-holding, and Brown explained it away as innocent, that he had a father-daughter relationship with Sarah, but that it was simply a lapse of judgment. Chris Bennett says that Michael Brown was upset that Chris didn't come to him directly and that this could have harmed the ministry. Chris at the time said he was apologetic and didn't pursue the matter further. So again, they thought this was adjudicated at the time, but Chris Bennett's incensed that he doesn't believe that this was honestly adjudicated at the time, and that's sort of why this has resurfaced. So during the same time frame, Dr. Brown was carrying on an emotional affair. He called it a soul tie with a married woman who's called Kim. Kim was married to a man called Ray, though Kim has since passed away. I believe it's Ron Cantor's the more up-to-date pseudonym or actual name of this person. That leaves this Ray or Ron Cantor to be the accuser of Brown in her stead. According to him, he confronted Michael Brown in early 2002 after Kim confessed to having phone sex with Brown. Brown admitted to everything, according to Ray, this Ron Cantor person. And both couples mutually decided to consider the matter over with no need to go public, according to Brown. Sarah Monk continued to be friendly with the Brown family, including Brown's wife, Nancy. In fact, she would leave notes for him around his office to find with encouraging messages or Bible verses. After things blew up between Kim and, with Kim and Ray, this Kim person and this Sarah person were friends. They had a falling out, is what this is describing. Sarah happened to be house-sitting for the Browns. According to her, she was attempting to hide messages for Brown to find after he returned from his trip, but in doing so came across a journal or notepad that contains lascivious messages between Kim and Michael. It was at this point that Sarah had an instant clarity that everything was wrong, Brown's relationship with Kim as well as his relationship with her. So again, this sort of sudden realization that has retconned the past to be traumatic. And that's one thing that drives me nuts about these reports, is that they treat this as a traumatic incident when it's really not. There's nothing traumatizing going on here. And if all this Kim stuff is true, she's a willing participant. Sarah claims that Michael Brown, said that he would formally apologize to her for what happened, as she would be representing the student body. He allegedly did so, and Sarah moved away from campus. According to Michael Brown, Sarah remained in contact with the Browns through 2015. According to Brown, none of that occurred regarding the house-sitting event. Instead, Sarah approached Michael Brown and told him that his behavior towards her made her feel uncomfortable. Dr. Brown asked for her forgiveness and they parted on good terms. So that's his side of that story in particular. Regarding the notes found while Sarah Monk was snooping in Brown's house, I mean, that's the allegation that she was snooping in his house, you know, going through drawers or maybe medicine cabinets. Brown is documented in the Firefly report. So this is a quote from Dr. Brown in the report. "No, I didn't think of saving that at all. Plus, it would have just been, it would just be my word. In any case, she's deceased. We didn't commit adultery. To repeat, I have never had a physical relationship of any kind with any woman other than my wife from the day I got saved until today. There's nothing more to say about it. The fact that we had a wrong soul tie, again, not a real thing in my opinion, that I repented, that all parties met, there was forgiveness. I made major lifestyle changes and got intensive counseling, and nothing remotely repeated like that in my life. So one misstep, not adultery, in 53 years is nothing to nothing the rest of the world needs to know, unless repentance and forgiveness and righteous dealing with sin has no more meaning in God's kingdom. So he's basically saying this was adjudicated in the past. Why are we bringing it up now? And to some degree, I actually largely agree with him. I largely agree with him on that point. But here's the thing that I haven't said about Dr. Brown is my overall opinion of him. I'm not a fan of Michael Brown. I'm not a fan of him. I'm not going to say he's a false teacher, but he is somewhat, because I haven't done the research enough to make that statement on him specifically. But man, with just off the top of my head, he'd be a category 3 on the Evangelical Dark Web's false teacher scale, which is the highest warning you can give and, you know, not say that someone's a false teacher, you know. It's more like an avoid, not mark sort of thing. And that's just without doing the research. Sarah asked me about it. He continues, "She felt bad for me and we walked through things. It's all journaled. And I was careful to see how she was doing in the days that followed. As for asking her not to say anything, I don't think it dawned on me to do so. She really was like a daughter to us and very much on our side. The only thing the note would have done was make the other woman look bad, not me." So Michael Brown's kind of saying that these notes weren't really about him. They're more about her and stuff like that. So he's trying to say that if these notes existed and if I kept these notes all these years, you know, it's just my word. It doesn't really prove anything. So this is the conclusion of the report. And with all this stuff about the Kim person, largely more so unfounded compared, or not unfounded, but inconclusive. That's a better way to put it. After all these years, she's since deceased, so we don't really have her side of the story. We have her widower husband, who seems to be accusing Michael Brown in his stead. Because, yeah, I get that he would be rightly bitter about that whole thing. Anyway, it is believed that any sexual misconduct, this is the report's conclusion, within ministerial relationships represented a profound violation of sacred trust, undermining the moral and ethical foundations upon which such relationships are built. Such behavior in any form is entirely unacceptable in any setting, but particularly within church and ministry settings. These actions not only betray the confidence placed in these roles, but also inflict significant harm on individuals and communities, eroding the trust essential for fostering spiritual guidance and support. Now, again, let's not pretend that significant harm was inflicted on individuals. That is very hyperbolic about what the actual details in the situation are. They didn't do any hanky-panky, but we will talk about something inappropriate that they did do. So we'll get to that in a second. Based on the gathered information and consistent accounts from multiple witnesses, it is evident that Brown engaged in an inappropriate relationship with Kim. That's IS number one. I hate the fact that they make these things unreadable by using euphemisms instead of actual names, as well as an inappropriate relationship involving sexually abusive misconduct with IS two, which is the Sarah Monk person. Sarah Monk was 19 years old when Brown first took notice of her, leading her to believe God was placing in her a place of favor under Brown. That's poorly worded. Within a year, at the age of 20, these interactions escalated to physical touch. With Sarah Monk, Brown was observed holding her hand on multiple occasions, and both Brown and Sarah Monk acknowledged that and admitted to Brown kissing Sarah Monk and making contact with the back midsection of her body. So, you know, small of her back. We can just say that. The meaning and exact locations of the kissing and contact to the rear are in question between the two accounts, but it must be looked at through the external viewpoint of an adult male having physical contact with an adult female. So, yeah, he put the hand on the smaller back, but then there's also, like, some, you know, grab ass that's being alleged here. And yeah, that's the most serious allegation that's really been substantiated, and there's like hardcore evidence for, or at least enough witness accounts regarding, because, you know, he sort of cops that as well, and he plays it off as a familial relationship. Because how many of us actually do this with our daughters? Do we really hit them on the butt and say, "Go get them, tiger"? No, this isn't a locker room full of peer-to-peer guys. So that's not how we interact with our daughters. That's weird. That's creepy. That's Michael Brown, at least 23 years ago. While it was impossible to definitively prove deviant intent behind these actions, actually, I don't really think it is. Just because they think it's impossible to prove deviant intent doesn't mean that it was. Just saying. We're not judging motivations, we're judging intent. You know, hitting, you know, slapping a girl in the butt, yeah, that is something that, you know, that's kind of universally something that you don't do unless you're in a marital relationship, then it's appropriate all the time. So, with that said, we'll continue. The pattern of Brown's actions suggested Brown knowingly contributed to the situation and created, and as the only person who sent and or received sexually related communications with Brown is deceased. So again, they don't have meaningful conclusions on the most salacious parts of their allegations. And that's a huge problem for the credibility of this report. The patterns of Brown's actions suggest that Brown knowingly contributed to the situation and created the environment where, according to Sarah Monk, she felt uncomfortable and, even if years later, acknowledges that the relationship was inappropriate. Again, this is a retroactive determination of the relationship at the end of the day, because they squashed the behavior then. By all accounts, they did, but now we're just re-examining the behavior under a Me Too lens. Meanwhile, we failed to actually definitively conclude on the most salacious allegations yet. Although the lack of direct proof of intent leaves room for speculation, the numerous individuals and interviews, and in many cases corroborating documentation, point to a deliberate involvement of sexual misconduct within BSRM or Fire School, which could also be viewed as sexual harassment or a hostile work environment, especially with Brown holding a position of power within the school generally, and more specifically with Sarah Monk. Based on the information, it is notable that no credible evidence has emerged between 2002 and 2025 to suggest that the further inappropriate sexual behavior by Brown, so again, this is an isolated incident is what they're saying. This strongly supports the belief that these were isolated incidents confined to 2001 and 2002, as corroborated by consistent witness accounts and comprehensive review of the available evidence. So I don't know how much money they spent on this nonsense, but, you know, Anyway, so the report uses feminism to presuppose that these women were traumatized by Brown's actions, even though the most serious allegations involve a deceased person with unsubstantiated claim. And, you know, Michael Brown gets a consolation when the report concedes that this was an isolated incident and not part of a broader pattern of behavior. So let's talk about the impact real quick. I wrote at the end of this article, the story will damage Michael Brown's reputation and enrich a feminist cottage industry in church circles, which is, you know, the Firefly people. They are a cottage industry. They grift, and they're, you know, industries like this shouldn't exist, and they're not a blessing to the church at all, especially when they're using feminist presuppositions. And that's something that we need to get out of the church. That's one of the most dangerous threats facing the church right now. I mean, liberalism in general, but feminism is the number one subcategory of liberalism. And I would say the number one individual category, like the individual threat to the church, if we want to itemize all these things. So we got to be mindful of that. Michael Brown obviously sinned in 2001, 2002. The extent of that sin, still outstanding. We don't exactly know. But whatever it does seem, it seems that there was a change in pattern of behavior to make sure that this stuff never happened again. And there's no evidence that it did. Should we re-examine sins that were adjudicated decades later and read them in a feminist light to presuppose trauma and gain victimhood status? Broadly speaking, no. But is Michael Brown this good guy? In my opinion, also no. So those are my thoughts about that. I have a lot of criticisms of Dr. Brown, but this stuff isn't really going to be the reason for them. So those are my thoughts on that. My name is Ray, it's the Evangelical Dark Web. If you like this kind of content, do also subscribe to the channel, to the podcast, if you're new. Otherwise, have a blessed day, stay based, Christ is King, and we will catch you on the next one.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.